Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
About their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I got man hits like I was Rod Carew.
Yeah. Can't wait.
What happened offensively in that period?
Turnovers.
What about on the defensive end? They had their most productive quarter. What'd you see there?
Turnovers. Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait, the only sports show where the hosts are right about everything. I am your host, Nick Provenis. With me, as always, we have Matt Milner.
Hey, everybody.
We have Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Hello there.
And if you remember last week, I tried to tell all of you that the Cleveland Cavaliers were going to make this a series. They were going to be too tough, too big for the Golden State Warriors. But no, at the last minute, Matt and Rusty bullied me into saying that the Golden State Warriors were going to make this a wipeout. But we're here. It's 2-2 before... We're recording this before Game 5, which is Sunday night. By the time you hear this, it will have already happened. But we want to talk a little bit about what we've seen in this series, which has ended up becoming one of the most fascinating finals that I can remember. So, Rusty, what has surprised you about this series?
Everything. Fascinating is the word, right? I mean, it's been an amazing series to pay attention to watch. I've just loved what's happened. I mean, I thought we were going to see just a blowout like we talked about last week. And it's been pretty cool that Cleveland's been able to kind of bully their way into a real series. I don't know that it continues, but as far as surprises go, the whole series surprises me. I thought maybe a game they would win. After that first game, I know we talked and you guys were both like, it's kind of fool's gold, this it being this close, and yet it hasn't been fool's gold, right? But maybe it goes back to fool's gold now. I mean, the last game might be a harbinger of things to come, really, is the truth of the matter.
Yeah, do you think the Golden State Warriors have figured this out now, Matt?
You know, I don't know if they figured it out, per se, because I think that implies that they really did something dramatically different in Game 4. And I don't think that they did. You know, I think it's kind of overblown, the storyline of, oh, well, they inserted Iguodala over Bogut. But that lineup, their starting lineup, I think its plus minus was -1.
It was about even. Yeah, it wasn't like that change alone did much of a difference, but
right.
It was stylistic. It was kind of like a tempo thing.
Well, and even that, I think, was also kind of overblown, because you know what the two slowest games of the series were?
Yeah, it was
Game 1.
Game 1 and 4.
And Game 4.
The two Warriors wins.
Yeah, so there's this perception that, well, you know, what got the Cavs in trouble in Game 4 is they started playing at the Warriors' pace, and the Warriors had a smaller lineup, so they were able to bring the ball up the court faster. And there were definitely spurts where that was true. There's no question. But on the aggregate, you know, the pace wasn't appreciably faster. So I think that what really happened is Cleveland missed a lot of the shots that it was making, and the Warriors made a lot of the shots they'd been missing. I mean, just on uncontested looks alone, the teams had a stark, stark difference. And I don't think that that's luck. I think that it was more a question of reversion to the mean, that, you know, the Warriors have a lot of knockdown shooters, and even their passable, you know, role players are guys that are still dangerous if they're left open at the three-point line. The Cavs, you know, their role players are more inconsistent. They're high volume guys, but they're not necessarily consistent catch and shoot options. So we've seen some reversion to the mean. I think that also taking Bogut's minutes all the way down to basically nothing at this point, so they're going small for the entire game, I think that is the big adjustment that the Warriors have made, and I think that that will be what helps them to close this series up.
Yeah, when I looked at the way that they made that shift, did a couple things. Bogut's been terrible this series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not sugarcoated. Like Harrison Barnes, he got a lot of grief for the way he's been playing, but Bogut has been lousy. And this is a series that on paper feels like it should be an Andrew Bogut series because of how big the Cavs are and how much bullying they need
Bogut.
Just style
of play.
Yeah, this makes sense for him.
Mm-hmm.
He has not been up for it.
Yeah,
he's been dealing out hard fouls. He's been doing typical Bogut stuff, but he hasn't been able to facilitate any offense. And Timofey Mozgov has outplayed him on both ends of the floor.
No doubt.
So going small, I thought it did something really smart where it maximized the amount of good players that Golden State was playing.
Right.
But it also did something where the Cavs started to chase the mismatch. Timofey Mozgov had a career game in game four, and he's had a career playoff series. But I would rather have Timofey Mozgov going for 28 points and getting all those touches than LeBron James kicking my butt every single possession.
Yeah.
LeBron did not have the insane usage rate he had through games one through three, where he's been putting up an unprecedented finals right now. But game four, he didn't take as many shots. He didn't do that 22 seconds of the shot clock offense as often. They went more often to Mozgov earlier in the shot clock. And that's something the Cavs or the Warriors are going to live with.
Mm-hmm.
I will let Timofey Mozgov continue to get those points if it means they keep him out there and our small ball advantage on the other end is so dramatic, so stark, that we're able to get more of these clear looks. Another thing I liked was that subtle insertion of David Lee early on kind of showed Draymond Green how to attack the pick and roll, because the reason why Draymond has not had the series we all expected him to have, he's been pressing. He's either moving too fast or too slow, or when he takes the three, it's not when they need it. He's just been a half step out of sync. David Lee got in there, and his impact wasn't I think it's been a little overblown, but what he did was he kind of set the blueprint for how to operate in space at the high elbow against these guys. Because you saw in game four, after Draymond kind of saw what David Lee was doing, Draymond started to do a little bit of that. He started making better plays. He started making better passes. It looked more like Draymond Green. Steph Curry at the top of the key. Draymond sets the pick. Two guys chase Curry. He finds Draymond at the elbow. He drives in, kicks it out to the corner three. It's Golden State Warriors basketball. That wasn't happening those first three games. So there are these minor, almost too subtle to the naked eye substitutions and substitution patterns that I feel like have made the Warriors look a little bit more like the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, they're making shots. That's what it comes down to. They weren't making shots. I thought they should have won game three based on the kinds of shots they were getting, but they got their butts kicked because they weren't making them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's that simple.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's fun to think about the X's and O's and to think about the matchups and the, you know, the strategy goes into all that. But at the end of the day, it is a make or miss league, and you can miss open shots, and it doesn't mean that the play was the wrong play or that the coach threw the wrong players out there. Sometimes the shot just doesn't go in. And you know, something else that I think has been really interesting about the David Lee role that we've seen is I think it's a testament to what a phenomenal job Steve Kerr and the rest of that staff has done of getting buy-in from the whole team. Because just think about how many precedents we have in recent NBA history for a star player or someone who at least perceives themselves to be a star player.
Somebody who has at one time produced like a star.
Yeah, exactly. Who feels like their role is not appreciated, that they're not given the opportunity to shine. And as a result, in the minutes that they do have, they're lousy because they're either trying to be, you know, the focus of every play that they're out there for, or they're not taking direction from the coach or buying into team concepts, or it all kind of snowballs. And it's, you know, we've talked about the Rondo situation, but that's a good example of how, you know, a player who felt they were miscast, felt they were underappreciated, and sabotaged their team because of that. David Lee, on the other hand, here's a player who basically, it's not just that he turned into a role player, he turned into a bench warmer. I mean, he was not even getting minutes, period.
He was an emergency guy.
An emergency guy, yeah. He was getting, you know, he was behind Mo Spates on the depth chart. You know, they would rather go with the, you know, the small lineups where you've got Sean Livingston, who's cross-matching onto threes and fours. I mean, we're talking 10th, 11th guy on the bench. And here they're able to dust him off in games 3 and 4, he not only plays really quality minutes, but he plays really unselfish minutes too, where he's aggressive enough to open up opportunities, but I thought that really some of his best contributions were passing.
He's such a good passer.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a great rebounder too, and he was able to be tough on the boards against, you know, Tristan Thompson and Mozgov when they were bullying other people around. And David Lee is never going to be the defender that, you know, Draymond Green is. But it was just a good example of how if you can find a way to keep players engaged and make them feel like they still have value on a team, even if they're not out there 30 minutes a game, that it behooves you to later be able to find a way to, you know, carve out a role for them, dust them off. And it's what we talked about with the Warriors at the beginning of the series. They just have more tools in the toolbox. There are more adjustments that Steve Kerr's staff can make. David Blatt, I think, has done a phenomenal job over the course of the playoffs. He just doesn't have any more cards to play. There's been a narrative now over the last couple days of, the Cavs players think that he needs to play more guys off the bench, that he needs to dust off Sean Marion. I'm sorry. There is nobody else on that bench.
What's that going to do?
Yeah.
No, it does nothing.
It's a catastrophe.
Doesn't do much for the team at that point. You know, and that's, I love what you're saying with David Lee and buying in. And I think that part of what we saw with the Warriors' inability to shoot and inability to knock down baskets, a little bit, I think, is just a lack of finals experience with them, right? And I think that there was a little bit of nerves. I think it was just a little bit of getting into that feistiness that LeBron James already knew, and he was able to tell everybody and show and lead by example, where it's taken Golden State a couple games to get into that mode more. And David Lee, with national championship experience, kind of has that ability to buy in and show people how to. He's a leader by example, right? And that's something that's really great that he's done, is coming off the bench and doing that.
Something you see from a lot of these kind of teams that have depth to this degree, it tends to be a blessing and a curse, because like you're saying, a lot of those guys in that 7 to 10 range all think that they're just as good as the guys in that 3 to 7 range. Mm-hmm. We saw that with the Denver Nuggets. Remember the 57-win Nuggets team went about 10 deep, and nobody was an A. Everybody was from a B-plus to about a C-plus. It was all interchangeable parts. But the underrated thing that George Karl did with that team was got them to barely buy in. It was a very tenuous locker room, because as soon as George Karl leaves and Brian Shaw comes in, it's disaster. Everybody's screaming for minutes. Everybody's super selfish. They were the most miserable team to watch last year, because it was their talent did not match their win total. Like, I think that was the biggest gap in the league in terms of what they had versus what they produced. Mm-hmm. And that's because they all thought they were as good as the guy in front of them. Getting guys of a David Lee or even an Andre Iguodala caliber to say, I'm going to take a step back because we can achieve something. That's really hard to do, especially when guys are making this kind of money. David Lee is still the highest paid guy on the team. Mm-hmm. And that is why Steve Kerr deserved to finish as high as he did in the Coach of the Year balloting, because that is not an easy thing to do, especially when guys got used to certain minutes and certain roles with Mark Jackson.
Right.
David Lee was starting. David Lee was going to start this year until he got hurt in training camp and Draymond Green started playing really well. So he not only took a step back, he took two steps back. And for him to be ready to go in the finals, and for Andre Iguodala to come off the bench, shift himself back into that starter mode, and likely play himself into the conversation for finals MVP if the Warriors do indeed win, even though I think LeBron should win it either way. I mean, this is the answer to the question, how well do you have to play to win finals MVP on a losing team?
Yeah,
that's how well LeBron has played.
I saw an amazing stat this morning that just, I mean, it bears out with what you watched, but obviously he hasn't really been able to come off the court because they've been so bad when he leaves the court. So with LeBron on the court, they're averaging, you know, something like 92.8 points per 100 possessions, which
not
is
that great,
not great. Without him, I think it's like 48 points per 100 possessions,
which is impossible.
Basically, it's like if you were to run out a mid-level AAU team, they could probably score about that.
Yeah, accidentally hit a couple layups.
Yeah, right.
It's been shocking. They can't do anything on offense without him. There was that stretch in game 4 where I think they were -8 in like 2.5 minutes with him on the bench, and it's just these Dellavedova J.R. Smith pick and rolls that go nowhere. I mean, they're running offense. It looks it's what you would imagine a good offense to look like with all these cross screens and movement. No one gets open. No one has any room. And the best you can hope for is a contested jumper.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at this team now that has gotten by on effort and tenacity alone and the singular brilliance of one of the five greatest players ever to do it. And now we're starting to see guys are fatiguing because they're playing roles they don't play. Matthew Dellavedova has to go to the hospital after every game because he's never played this many minutes at this level.
Right.
But he's also played himself into a position because you look at this Cavs roster, there's no real way to upgrade it. They're going to have to pay all these guys. They're kind of in that same situation the Clippers are in. Mm-hmm. They have to bring everyone back because they're going to be up against the salary cap no matter what they do. The luxury tax doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Dan Gilbert's going to pay all these guys because he sees it as, I'm paying LeBron James this payroll.
Right.
Whatever it takes to keep him around, I don't care. I'll pay the luxury tax, I'll pay the repeater, I'll pay whatever it takes. But they can't really make any significant additions to the team. So one thing I wanted to ask you guys, J.R. Smith, Matthew Dellavedova, these are guys that are probably not going to be worth the contracts they get. I'm going to throw out a number. J.R. Smith goes to the Cavs front office and he says, I want $22 million over 2 years. Did they give it to him?
I don't. And I
How do you replace it?
Well, I think what you've seen in the playoffs, though, so far, is that with J.R., or at least in the finals, you've seen, he has been a catastrophe.
He does a lot of dumb things.
He's done so many dumb things on both sides of the court. But I don't think that even under their situation, I think what you want from JR is you want him to maybe be able to, you know, be a shot maker, a secondary creator, and a, you know, a bench scorer. But I think that that's something where you say, you know what, we can replace 70% of the good things that you do and hopefully eliminate 100% of the terrible things you do.
Yeah, eliminate the punching.
Yeah, eliminate the and do it at the, you know, the cap exception or something like that, or you know, find ways to get creative about moving some of the extraneous guys you have on the roster. You know, they do have a lot of big men now. There's an opportunity. I mean, Varejao's coming back. There, if they bring back Thompson and Love, they have too many big men who all deserve starters minutes. So I think there are creative ways to do that. I don't know. What do you think?
That's
Rusty?
A really good point. And their front office has been creative in bringing LeBron back and bringing in J.R. Smith and Shumpert and Mozgov. Mozgov was a revelation, right? I mean, he was having a decent season. He was on my fantasy team when he got traded to Cleveland. He was having a decent season, but what he did in Cleveland and what he's done and the grittiness he brings in the center for them is
just the comfort with David Blatt.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, and so Cleveland does have a way to do something, and they do have too many bigs. And I get rid of J.R. Smith, honestly. I mean, you still need him. If Cleveland wins more, they've got to get something from J.R. Smith now. But he's too many headaches. And if you pay him $22 million over 2 years, you're all at once rewarding his behavior. And I don't know that he stays in line. When you reward that behavior, I don't know that he stays in line after that.
He's always been a guy that I feel like you have to go like week to week. Like, if there was a way that you could just sign a guy to a 10-day
yes.
contract over and over and over again,
yes.
he'd be incredible. But that's not the way it works because he has leverage. It's not what he's worth. It's what he's in a position to negotiate. That's what Jalen Rose always says on his podcast. And he's in a position where you can argue that he would be able to be in a more J.R. Smith suitable role with Kyrie Irving, with Kevin Love, with actual offensive talent, where you bring him in off the bench a la a Jamal Crawford, you ride him when he's hot, you sit him when he's useless. They can't do that right now. They only have 6.5 guys. So he's out there when you don't necessarily want him out there committing dumb fouls 80 feet away from the hoop.
Yeah.
But they can't replace the scoring ability that he could bring off a bench that doesn't really have any. So, and I think LeBron likes him. So that's a trump card. I want to ask
that
you.
That is a trump card.
I also
he
want
kind of runs things.
Yeah,
Sorry.
He's the GM.
Yeah.
Matthew Dellavedova. This is in a league of 450 players. He's one of the top 500 basketball players in the world. That's amazing. But it's kind of a Linsanity thing. Doesn't it kind of feel like he's performing at he's performing over his head in kind of the perfect situation, accentuating it what it is he does best while he's still doing things that are just not worth an NBA roster spot. Those drives to the hoop where he's looking to throw a lob to nobody, I mean, those kill your offense. But he's a fan favorite. They cannot let him walk. He's turned himself into a really good defensive player. And you can see a scenario where Kyrie Irving is back and Dellavedova is a nice third guard because he can guard both spots. Mm-hmm. Is he in a position to go to the Cavs front office and say, I want 3 years, $15 million?
Yeah, that's exactly the number I had in my head.
That's a lot of money.
I kind of use as my template for that. You know, you think about what were the Heat paying like Mario Chalmers?
Right.
You know, what is the going rate for that kind of guard? And I think that, you know, on the open market, I think that he can easily get some team to pay him that. Again, whether or not he is worth that over the 3 years, I'm not sure. I think that there's a scenario in which he is. But to the Cavs, I agree, based on what they could replace him with and based on his value to the franchise and just keeping LeBron happy, I think that they would have to go for something.
It's
like
a $15 million bonus for Game 3.
Right.
Well, and he's also loved by Cleveland at this point, and so if you let him walk and anybody else signs him, I mean, the fans just aren't going to be happy.
And it's a bad look for the locker room.
Yeah.
Because that guy, he's everything you would ask a player to do in the finals. Sacrifice, leave it all on the floor. Every cliche that you could throw out there, Matthew Dellavedova did. He played over his head. He played his butt off. He won the respect of everybody in that locker room. And then if he comes back and has like a number in his head, because this is going to be the best position he'll ever have to negotiate in a professional basketball setting. Mm-hmm. He comes in there and Dan Gilbert says, that's too much for you. Like pulls a Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. I have a number in my head of what you're worth. If you say 1 cent over that number, you're gone.
Right.
That works in football. I don't think it works in this situation.
Yeah.
Because Matthew Dellavedova is half the reason they're still alive. Where are they at if he doesn't have that game against the Bulls? Where are they at in this finals if he's not chasing around Steph Curry and being a maniac? Where are they at if he's not barrel rolling into the Hawks and blowing people's knees and ankles out? That's a $15 million bonus for right now. And I think he's in a very unique position to negotiate it. I think that stuff's fascinating. And we got some guys on the Warriors right now. Draymond Green, we've been talking a lot about. I think he gets the max deal no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. But we've got some guys there that are going to be on the move. David Lee, I mean, they ask him to sacrifice this year. He's done it. I don't think they can do that to him again next year. Is there a market out there, a trade market out there for a $15.5, $16 million big man that played about 8 minutes a game this year but has all-star experience?
I think that salary cap notwithstanding, there's a market. I think the trouble is making the cap math work.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be over the cap. They're going to be way, way, way over the cap. So they, you know, whatever they get back, they'll have to be able to match within, what, 10%, I think?
If there's a trade exception with a team that's under the cap, they might just ship that back to them.
True.
So are they willing to trade them for basically nothing?
I mean, I think that they would have to get something back. Because there's really, I mean, from their perspective, you have the $15 million on the cap for, it's only one more year.
Right.
And, you know, as he's shown in the finals, he does still have value. And
this is a good basketball player.
He's a good basketball player. Yeah. And they've had pretty good injury luck as well. You know, there's a scenario in which you need to rely on David Lee more heavily next season. So I do think that they try to get something back, even if we're talking about a 2020 protected second round pick or whatever. I don't think that they give up assets just to unload him, especially given that he has proven to be a good team player and locker room guy in the midst of all this. But I think there's got to be a team out there who's watched what he's done in the finals and maybe is sitting on a trade exception that's large enough that they don't have to part with a major piece. And there has to be a workable trade out there. I can't help but wonder if, you know, if a team like Houston, for instance, can come up with some creative package.
Somebody that strikes out in free agency.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but they still need a player who can play good minutes, who can fit in with their system, who can, you know, he does three or four things really well for an NBA player as a starter or a big off the bench. So, you know, you take a one-year flyer on a guy like that, you get his bird rights, and then you can, you know, re-sign him if he succeeds, and if not, you let him walk.
If I'm in the East, I make a move. I'm Boston. I'm Indiana. I'm some of these teams that are kind of on the fringe, maybe need a little pep in the offense, another
Indiana's
big.
Indiana's great.
There are places for him. And I do feel like it's a unique opportunity to really not have to give up much for a guy who can really play ball. I also think that the Warriors need to make this move because I think it's a bad look in their locker room to keep a guy who has sacrificed like this, has produced in the league at the level that he's produced, and to just keep him on ice. I don't think that's fair, and I think everybody around there, this situation just, it hasn't gotten toxic, but I could see it getting toxic next year. But before we get to that offseason, I want your picks for, because right now we're even. So we can't just say that this is going to be a wipeout because the Cavs have proved us all wrong. So who's going to win this series?
I still think, obviously, Golden State. I don't think it even goes seven. I think it's six. I think Golden State has their legs under them now. I think that this is it. And LeBron, if he keeps playing these kind of minutes, I mean, by the time you get to the fourth quarter, it's got to be tough for him to keep making shots.
It's tough for a human being.
He's a human being, and I know sometimes he has not seemed like one, or he's seemed like a superhuman person, but I just can't see him being able to really knock down shots at the end if he keeps playing 45 minutes a game.
What do you think, Matt?
Well, my original prediction was Golden State in five. I'm going to stick with that. I think Golden State wins tonight, and then the Cavs are sucked into a vortex in another dimension and have to forfeit the series.
That's smart.
That's the boldest prediction we've had on the show yet.
Yeah.
We haven't had any fourth dimension vortex sucking.
Yeah, just, you know, if there, whatever the equivalent of the Springfield mystery spot is in Oakland, I think that's going to factor prominently into the remainder of the series.
Man, that would bum ESPN out because a lot of people have been watching this finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think ultimately the Warriors have this because not only did they look better and more Warriors-like, the Cavs, there's only so much you can do on grit alone. I mean, I love the way they've been playing. I mean, all of my admiration and...
Heck yeah.
It's been incredible watching an out-man team just hang around by virtue of how hard they play. And LeBron's been, I mean, this is history we're seeing. This has been...
Really is.
This is why you watch this stuff for what LeBron is doing right now. This is like peak of his powers. It's like what for the younger listeners, this is what it was like to watch Michael Jordan. This is what it was like to watch those Bird Magic duels. This is true.
I would call friends and tell them and remind them, hey, the finals is on right now. You had better be watching. This is LeBron James doing magic stuff.
Yes. And I saw somebody bring up a comparison. He's Stockton and Malone. That was kind of a funny way to think about it. But he's doing everything. But that's not enough when you've got a team that can do everything also. I mean, they don't need one guy to do everything. They've got guys. And we haven't seen Klay Thompson's best. Draymond is still getting his back loose and figuring it out. I just feel like there's still that Warriors game where they just start raining threes. And I think ultimately the Cavs might get that one in Cleveland just by virtue of, you know, that whoever's had their back against the wall is who's answered the call in this series.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to see seven, so I'll go seven. But I think the Warriors do it.
I want to see seven as well. I'm totally with you. I really hope it does. I think the Warriors do it, though. It's hard to imagine. Having said that, if you have LeBron James in a game seven, I don't know that I would put any money against him. None.
That's true.
None. I don't think I would put $1 against him. So
he would play all 48 or 53 or whatever the game goes.
It wouldn't matter.
And they would do that same bully ball offense where he plays. He probably has a usage rate of 100% in that game.
Yeah.
And so I don't vote against. I can't bet against him at all.
Don't
none.
Don't you want to see
seven.
That though?
I'm dying to see it.
So
dying to see it.
That's right now. That's the NBA today. But after the break here, we're going to talk about the NBA tomorrow. A little bit of NBA draft preview coming up here on Can't Wait.